I think the fact that the medical system is so restrictive is actually a good thing for the producers, because the last thing you want if you're producing marijuana is to have the current Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, come down on you for misusing the right to give out medical. And in a really restrictive environment, it's pretty easy for the state to argue, look, we're doing this right. We're doing this in a careful way. And what they can do is piggyback the recreational on top of the medical. So they can say, look, we've got incredible restrictions on the production and monitoring the production. We've got incredible restrictions on routinely testing the quality of the product for herbicides and for potency. We've got incredible restrictions on how this can be distributed. We can use that same network for recreational, and the odds of the feds coming after us go down dramatically.
The more restrictive you would have in a situation, does that make it less productive on an economic sense? Are you likely to sell less of that or market less of it because it's so restrictive?
It certainly makes it more expensive. There's no question about that. You know, you compare it to California, which has the least restrictive system in the country. Essentially, for medical in California, you can go into any doctor and just say, my toe hurts, or I've got this weird tingling in my arm, and I think it would feel better with marijuana. And the doctor will say, okay, you can have marijuana.
That's not the way it's set up here in Illinois.
Oh, no. We have a very restricted list of conditions. You have to actually have a continuing relationship with a doctor. You cannot just walk into any clinic and have an anonymous doctor sign off on things. These are conditions that, for the most part, are clearly diagnosable. So you cannot, for chronic pain in Illinois, you cannot get marijuana. The most vague condition in Illinois would be PTSD, which, although it's vague in terms of how you diagnose it, it's pretty clear. It's not something that people typically just make up.
And the most common usage, I guess, might be what, cancer treatment? Is that the most common?
A couple of things. It can be in the treatment of cancer for treating nausea that goes along with cancer. It is extremely useful for people who have sometimes depression, although that's in Illinois, that's not typically used. It's used that way in other states quite often. The list is pretty long. It's things you might not expect. Crohn's disease, for example. I mean, it's a very specific listing, and I can't think of any one condition that stands out as the most common.
There's a major cultural shift on attitudes toward cigarette smoking and tobacco use in general in the United States. How does this legal pot movement fit in with this shift?
It doesn't. I mean, I've been looking at this issue of drug policy for a long time. And if 20 years ago someone had said to me, we're going to have medical marijuana in much of the country, we're going to have recreational marijuana, I would have laughed and said, there's no way that's going to happen, because it's getting harder and harder to smoke tobacco anywhere. It's getting harder and harder to find food products that don't have extensive labeling, because we're very concerned about what's in our food. And it seems that going toward marijuana is a move in the opposite direction.
But is it maybe marijuana replacing tobacco as far as some sort of a accepted vice, maybe?
Actually, the drug that's being replaced in some jurisdictions is alcohol. Yeah. And it's no accident that alcohol manufacturers and distributors have been some of the biggest opponents of marijuana legalization.
Yeah, I guess because of the high factor, right?
That's right.
So how would you say attitudes have shifted?
Some recent polls, and by recent I mean within the last couple of weeks, have come out that are just stunning to me. 61% of the U.S. population favors full legalization of marijuana. I can't imagine that being true 10 years ago. 94% of the population favors medical marijuana. That's amazing to me. I never would have predicted that.
What were the comparable figures, say, 5 years or 10 years ago?
Anecdotally. I would say 10 years ago, if you would have had 30-35% favoring legalization, that would have been a lot. The medical, you might have had 60%. You would have never had 94%. Interestingly enough, also, there is, of course, this conflict between federal law and state law. 70% of the public wants the federal government to keep its nose out of what states do on the issue of marijuana.
And that's pretty much what's happened, right?
That's pretty much what's happened, although we'll see what happens under the new attorney general, who has a personal contempt for marijuana, and I don't think he's doing political posturing. I think it's deeply felt, and he thinks there's no such thing as a good use of marijuana or a safe use. He sees it as many ways equivalent to heroin. And he is the attorney general, which means that he can direct the enforcement of federal laws. I should also point out that there are some really interesting practical things about this from a law enforcement perspective. As with any bureaucracy, numbers matter. And so if you want more money for enforcing DUI, you can show that we have lots of DUIs and we could use another squad car to do that. Nationally, 40% of all drug-related arrests are for marijuana, and most of those are simple possession. If you take those away—
gives the cops something else to do, right?
It gives them something else to do is the positive. The negative is it's harder for them to argue they need lots of money for drug enforcement.
Because there is not a whole lot of drug enforcing to do when
the numbers are just smaller.
Yeah.
And of course, they can shift to emphasizing heroin, for example, or methamphetamine. But it is – numbers have an impact. Numbers matter. And so they will have to figure out how do we continue to argue for large grants to go after drugs if our numbers go down, we lose 40% of our arrests. Mm-hmm. I think they can make that argument. But they're going to have to figure out how to do it convincingly. The other important thing to note is this move toward medical just doesn't stop. Mid-April, we had the West Virginia legislature pass and the governor sign medical marijuana, which is something of a landmark because it means now 29 states and the District of Columbia now have medical marijuana. That accounts for about two-thirds of the U.S. population is now covered by that. We also have 9 states with about 20% of the U.S. population with legalization. And not only that, but in states where they haven't legalized, they are continuously reducing penalties. We have the Houston, Texas, the county there is the third largest county in the country. Their prosecutor, and no one would claim Texas is liberal on much of anything, their prosecutor has decided they will no longer prosecute small marijuana cases. They said that they deal with about 10,000 of those a year, and it's costing them about $25 million to do it, and it's not worth it financially. So when you have a Texas prosecutor deciding that small levels of marijuana just aren't worth prosecuting, that's a real sea change in mindset.
Last week, the head of Colorado's legal pot program told lawmakers here in Illinois that she believes the legal market for marijuana is eating into the black market, funding drug abuse treatment and prevention, and providing a safer product overall. I would think this is exactly what Colorado voters wanted when they chose to legalize pot a few years back. What can you tell us about how Colorado's program has worked out?
It has worked out better than I think anyone expected. Critics were projecting doom and gloom that particularly high school age kids would be getting free access, that crime would go up. None of those things have happened. In fact, the most recent surveys suggest that marijuana use by young people is about where it was before these relaxed regulations went into place. And by the way, I say relaxed for adults. They were never relaxed for juveniles. It was always illegal for juveniles to have these.
So if you live in Colorado and you're not noticing things like more homelessness or increased poverty, things like that, this is not being increased because of people are using more pot. In other words, an extension of, I guess, an alcohol situation.
The sky wasn't falling after all these relaxed regulations went into place. And by the way, one of the things that I don't think gets talked about enough – And you mentioned it very briefly, but I think it's an important point. When you buy any illegal drug on the black market, you never know what's in it. It's one of the reasons why people are dying of heroin overdose because of the other things that are put in with the heroin. And that's true with marijuana. I know that in some communities they found that what looks like marijuana is actually basically a bunch of green leafy matter with PCP sprayed on it. When you have a legal market, as in Colorado, at least you can be sure of the purity. You can be in Illinois' proposed law, for example, it's very clear that the product is to be tested for not only contaminants but for level of the active ingredient THC. And so it is safer in that regard. But beyond that is an important point that I don't think enough people take into consideration. If you buy marijuana on the black market, you increase your odds of dealing with someone who also has access to cocaine and heroin and methamphetamine. If you buy your marijuana through the legal channels, you're not getting access to those other sources. And so I think it has a real potential to reduce people's access to these other illegal drugs.
But the people who control the illegal black market of drug dealing, when their market dries up, aren't there other areas they're going to choose to break the law or gain some sort of financial advantage?
They're clearly going to increase marketing, and they're clearly going to increase efforts to get people to use. I just think it'll take more work on their part. It's going to be harder. And these other drugs, by the way, won't go away. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just suggesting that people who are trying things, experimenting with drugs, will have to make a more concerted effort if they want to get to these other harder drugs.
They'll probably make drugs stronger and more attractive, maybe. Say that you can buy your over-the-counter stuff, sure, but what I have for you here is really going to turn you on more.
And price will matter. We may see the price. I mean, one of the things we've seen with the current heroin crisis is as they put restrictions on access to prescription pills, the price of those pills on the street, on the underground market, went up dramatically, and heroin actually became cheaper. And so if you have to choose, you're an addict and you want to buy a supply, you're going to go with the cheaper source.
Illinois' social service safety net system is being stretched as thin now as ever these days. If Illinois were to legalize pot, could the positive economic factors that would bring be in place quickly enough to make sure the safety net is strong enough to absorb any problems that might occur because of legalized pot?
We don't know. Certainly, I've heard nothing out of Colorado or the state of Washington about their treatment services being overwhelmed with marijuana. What you find is they're currently overwhelmed because of heroin, but that, again, is a very separate issue altogether. I don't think that's going to be an issue, but as I said, I've been wrong before about the direction in which things take. Drugs are a curious phenomenon.
What are the greatest positive factors Illinois has toward efforts to legalize marijuana, and what are the greatest weaknesses of the state? I'm talking about the state geographically.
Geographically, I don't think that's a big relevant issue in the sense that we're talking about the medical marijuana and the recreational marijuana that would be used has to be produced here.
And there's certainly no shortage of places to produce our agriculture in Illinois.
We are primes. In fact, the kind of – if you're talking about outdoor cultivation, which we really haven't talked about much, the conditions in Illinois, the soil, the climate – every condition that is perfect for corn is perfect for marijuana.
So why not have outdoor production of it? I mean, is that part of what they're talking about setting up, or is it all going to be indoors?
I'd be surprised if there was much outdoor, and a couple of reasons for that. One is
– security, I suppose.
Security,
right?
Is one. Another is if you're growing indoors, you're growing with artificial lighting, which means you can manipulate the length of days and you can basically be producing 24/7. People who don't grow marijuana may not realize that you don't actually want lighting 24 hours a day. As the plant matures, you want to basically you start out with a long period of daylight, and then you shorten the days as if you're going into fall. And when you go into fall, then the plant turns into its bud producing phase, and indoors you can actually manipulate that and speed up the process of the plant maturing in a way that you could not do outdoors. So you can actually make more money. You can have as many as 3 harvests a year indoor. Outdoor, you'd probably have 1, maybe 2 if you're lucky.